Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible every day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Do you have questions about KPP's Dynamic Growth Investment Program? We've talked about it. This utilizes stocks, exchange-traded funds, closed-end funds, and American depository receipts, all to gain exposure to companies and asset classes that demonstrate good value and strength. Send Steve a note. Just click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com with your question. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, June 20th, 2016 edition of Invest Talk. And I'd like to welcome you all to this roundtable discussion. And we hope to include you as much as we possibly can. I have many topics I would like to discuss, but ultimately what's most important is what is on your mind. And we hope you'll be a part of the show this hour. Our number, as always, is 888-99-CHART. You can reach us by phone whenever you are listening. And remember, if you're traveling, you can always hear us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on investtalk.com or on our terrestrial stations. You can also use our Anywhere app, which is ready for you on investtalk.com. You can also text us your question as well. Now, we often hear from listeners who are just starting out on their investing journey, and they can be of any age. Young, middle-aged, old, whatever it is, whether you're beginner or experienced, you have a role. You have duties. And that is to constantly learn. Take the next step in your evolution as an investor. Maybe you're just graduating college. Maybe you're still in high school. Maybe you're just getting into retirement. Whatever it is, you need to be constantly learning, and that's probably one of the reasons you're tuned into the show, so you can learn more about what you don't know. It's one of my favorite quotes. My grandfather always said, you don't know what you don't know. And unless you're constantly searching for those things that you don't know or don't understand, you're going to have gaping holes in your knowledge. And our goal is to help you fill those holes. So here are three suggestions for you, especially if you're very reluctant to expose yourself to too much risk. And in this market, that's very understandable. First, before you do anything, learn about the various types of investments. Now, we try to grow your knowledge on this program, InvestTalk, but you need to look further. We're not a one-stop shop. Nothing is. No factor can tell you exactly what to do with your money. Not your age, not your risk tolerance, not what is available out there in the marketplace, not what is over or undervalued, not what the media is talking about, not what your cousin or your friend told you about, not what you read on a website. It's all of those things and more. And if you're brand new to investing, you need to get a lay of the land. Read some books. We have a good list on investtalk.com. There are investing 101 type meetup groups that are out there. Do your own research. Go to different websites. Read about a company, not just the numbers, but understand the company. What do they do? What's the industry dynamics? Is it a large cap company? Is it a small cap company? Is it a growth name or is it a value name? Does it pay a dividend? What's its cash flow situation? Who's its closest competitor? Does it have an economic moat? What's the leadership of the company? You see how deep it can get? These are all questions you need to answer before you make a decision. Now, second, try to keep your costs low. Simplify your strategy. I see this all the time. Over-diversification or just no plan whatsoever. We see, I saw a portfolio come in last week. You know, it was 18% in this stock, 22% in this fund, 3% in this stock, 0.02% in this stock, 30% cash, has this ETF that's 12% in the portfolio. No rhyme or reason to it. So keeping your strategy as simple as possible, but also for you. What's your goal? Is it minimizing risk? Is it maximizing return? Is it somewhere in the middle? Is it maximizing dividends and income? Are you a growth investor? Are you a value investor? What do those mean? All of these are questions you need to ask yourself and you need to find answers for. So number three, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. Like I said earlier, one article you read, one story you hear, one balance sheet that you look at or cash flow statement or earnings statement you look at for a company doesn't tell you the whole picture. Just because you read a book, just because you had a light bulb flash in your head, doesn't mean you know all there is to know. Now, you're never going to know everything. I understand that. There's a lot to know. But don't get sucked in by one narrative or one piece of information. That's when little mistakes turn into big mistakes. Okay, so you need to step back, have some perspective, understand economics, understand what the Fed is doing, global central banks. That's huge in today's market. If you're not understanding global central banks and what they have created, you are completely blind to a large part of the market that matters dramatically. What central banks do means so much in today's environment. So there's a lot you need to think about. And that's why we're here. So what is your question today? It's healthy to have questions. You need to have questions. If you don't have any questions, you're probably not thinking hard enough. You're not thinking enough. So you can call, talk to us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk, or in between times, you can just leave your question and we will answer it on the next show. So here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line. Once again, that number is 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, I listen to your show on podcast, on Radio Stitcher app on my phone, and I had a general question. If you had a few mutual funds that you really like and you want to always invest in, but you're looking for general guidelines as to when you enter as the funds become available, so what do you look at in a chart? What moving averages do you use? And again, I'm only interested in when to get into, you know, a specific fund, what to look for as a guideline, 200-day moving average, 50-day moving average, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for the show, and I hope to hear myself on the podcast one of those days. Thank you.
All right, so general guideline of when to get into a mutual fund. Well, that depends on are you buying and you're holding for a long period of time? Are you dollar cost averaging in? Are you looking to trade? How are you? What are you looking to do? Now, if you're dollar cost averaging, meaning for everyone else out there, dollar cost averaging is you take the same amount of money every X period of time, whether it's once a month, once a week, once a quarter, once a year, which is kind of too wide of a time frame. But, you know, on a consistent basis, it's $500 a month, $2,000 a month, whatever it is. And you invest the same amount in the same allocation, no matter what the market's doing, going up and down. And naturally, you'll buy more when the market's down, when the market's cheaper, right? Because the same dollar amount, lower price, you're buying more shares. Opposite happens when prices are going up. You're buying less at the higher price. but the dollar amount stays the same. So if you're doing dollar cost averaging, you're pretty much, you don't really care about timing. It's just consistent. You got to be consistent with it. And for most people, that's probably best if they have the stomach for the volatility of what they're putting in it. Now, if you're looking for something more long-term, this is a rough time to be doing it. You want to look at the underlying index of that particular fund. So if it's a bond fund, you want to look at underlying bond fund indexes. And the easiest way to do that is through some sort of an ETF. Okay. If it's a large cap stock fund, you probably want to use the S&P. That's a good barometer. And you want to be buying near support, so understanding what is support. One of my favorites is the 100-day moving average. I really like that 100-day moving average. Some people use 200-day. I feel like the 100's a good in-between short and long-term moving average. There's a lot that goes into timing, and it can be difficult. So it just depends on what your goal is. If your goal is 10-plus years, just buy today and just don't forget about it, or just forget about it. Now, do you have a question about real estate? It's one of our most popular topics on the show because so many of us have a stake in it. I'm a licensed realtor, and I'd be happy to answer your questions that you may have, whether it's about buying a home, selling a home, real estate investing, financing, commercial acquisitions, commercial sales. You can call now or get a note to me directly. Just go to contact Justin on investtalk.com. Chart 888-992-4278. Now, investing today is simpler, but not exactly safer than it was, say, 50 years ago. That's our main talking point today. I think this is going to be very instructive for a lot of people of how different the investing environment today is versus 50 years ago. And I was lucky to be mentored by my grandfather, who really started as a stockbroker in the 60s, and he evolved through the 60s and 70s and 80s, and in the early 90s, he decided that being a broker was not the future, and you're starting to see that now as brokers are going by the wayside with a new DOL rule. You know, he was 20 years ahead of his time, 25 years ahead of his time, but he saw it coming, the writing on the wall, that the best thing for clients was fee-based advice, not commission-based advice. And so I was lucky to be brought up under that, and he would tell me the stories about the 60s and the 70s, and things are a lot different than they are they're different today than they are in the 60s in many, many ways. So I'm going to go over what those are, and I think it'll be very instructive to the pros and cons of today's environment. I also want to talk about lending money to friends or family. This is big because I think a lot of people do it, and if you have a decent amount of money, you're probably going to be approached by somebody in your family, maybe a friend, and you need to make sure you do it the right way. I hear this all the time, and many times the lender does not get paid back. The loan is just forgiven, or maybe you only get part of it, or whatever it is. But you need to take some steps to safeguard that loan. Even if it's to a friend or a family, it does not matter. Okay, so I want to get into that. Also, we're in the heart of election season. And I say this a lot, and I try not to be political, even though I'm not voting for either of the major party candidates. I'm voting for Gary Johnson, just as an FYI to everyone out there. But I want to talk about presidents and the economy. A lot of people think that the economy is driven by presidents, and frankly, it's just not. They have very little to do with the outcomes of the underlying economy, and I'm going to talk about that and why. And then I want to get to PIMCO's new warning about the storm brewing in the real estate market, something we've been talking about for a little while, but PIMCO just came out with a new note on that. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk. Many investors love to ride the trends of a stock, but they sometimes ride too long and end up getting out with little profit or actually a loss. Let's talk about it. Let's go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Frank and calling from Walnut Creek. I want you to take a look at a company called Generic Holdings, Inc., and its symbol is GNRC, George, Nancy, Richard, Charlie. It's a manufacturer of generators, oftentimes powered by natural gas, and looks like it might be a backdoor way to invest in problems that the grid may pose in the future. Talk to you later. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, he's looking at Generac Holdings. They manufacture standby power generators and components for residential, oil and gas, industrial, and commercial markets. It's fallen dramatically since the middle of 2014, gone from $60 a share back then. That's the, that two-year high. Hit a low of 26 and change late last year. Now we're back up to about 38. So it's been quite the wild ride. It does not pay a dividend. It's about a $2.5 billion company. So, you know, on the small to medium size, has a decent amount of debt. Let me look at its debt ratios to see how steep in debt they are. Yeah, their financial leverage, it was going down. Now it's going back up. Their business did get hit pretty hard back in the recession. So it's certainly a cyclical name. People aren't going to spend a lot of money on backup generators when they're having trouble just paying their normal bills. So I could see why their business is so cyclical. And that worries me, especially since we are closer and closer every day to the next recession. And I think we are getting pretty close to that. And they probably got hit. Looks like they did get hit from the drop in oil prices. And if they provide power generators to oil rigs, for example, then if oil rigs being shut down, then there's no reason for them to supply those markets. So you've seen the operating margins fall from 23.7% in 2013 to 12.5% trailing 12 months. So it's pretty much been cut in half over the past 2.5-3 years or so. So that is worrisome. Cash flow is still positive. It's, you know, it's on the relative cheap side. My biggest issue is it's so cyclical. It's so cyclical, and you've already seen a drop in that. It's not cheap enough for me. It's just not there. I would like to see this in the teens. If it was in the teens, I would say it's cheap enough. You're still trading at 5x book. Yeah, it's not cheap enough for me. I would keep it on my watch list. It still is a pretty profitable company, pretty solid return on equity. And when things rebound for the company, which I'm sure they'll figure out a way to turn things around, I think it'll be good. But I think your deep value play is going to be in that in the teens, not 38, right? So keep on your watch list. Now, believe it or not, investing is much simpler than it was 50 years ago. Back then, knowledge, understanding information were very, very primitive. And I'm talking about the 60s, you know, think of the Nifty 60, the Nifty 50 in the late 60s was pretty popular. If you don't understand what that is, go back, do your market historical research and understand that it was just one of those kind of bubbles. There's always bubbles of different kinds in the equity markets. You have the tech bubble in the late 2000s, and that was pretty similar in a lot of ways. And the Nifty 50 was 50 pretty much largest industrial companies. Now, today, we are flooded with information and advice. Much of it, however, is no more than self-serving posturing, you know, talking heads, for example. Now, if you go back in the 60s, if you're an individual investor, the chances are overwhelming that you owned mostly stocks. Mutual funds were pretty rare back then. So you pretty much own individual stocks and bonds. Now, more than 3/4 of large companies offered pensions for their workers at retirement. However, savings rates were still 11%. That's more than twice what it is today. Even though pension offerings are much lower than the percentage of large companies offer pension, it's a much lower percentage today than it was back then. Now, when it comes to trading and information, the only way to buy stocks and bonds was through a stockbroker. There was no online brokers, obviously, because there's no internet. If you wanted stock prices, you'd have to wait for the paper, read in the paper. Or you could go into your broker's office and look at the electronic ticker tape. We have a couple of those laying around the house, the old school ticker tapes. A trade that normally would cost less than $10 today would cost hundreds of dollars back in the 60s. In addition, the spread between the bid and the ask, the offer to buy and the ask to sell the stock, could be as much as 2.5% for even large companies. Today, it's less than 0.1%. In the 60s, brokerages didn't compete on price. There was a scandal when the first discount broker opened. You see the dichotomy? It's much, much different today. So after the break, I'm going to get to more of how it's different and how that's positive and negative. Now, where do you go for your answers? Hope you give us a call. Call our anytime line at 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing. Have you done your homework? There's much to learn, and thankfully there are many sources of knowledge. Visit our recommended books section on investtalk.com. Read about the books that you should be reading. See Steve's book, Above Average Investing, for the average investor. It's there too. It's all on investtalk.com. We continue with this Monday, June 20th Invest Talk. Invest Talk insiders have access to webinars like Breaking the Risk Barrier, Measuring and Managing Investment Risk. It's a free membership, and once you're in, you're in. You can sign up now for free on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
Hello, Steve. This is Jay from Los Angeles. I have a question. I hear you always saying that there are trillions of funds in the sidelines, which is not invested. Where do you get that information from? Do you look at any websites, or how do you know that there are trillions of dollars sitting in the sidelines? If you could please answer my question, that would be great. Thank you very much, sir. Bye.
That's a great question. I don't know. I know I read it from time to time, and you just know you can look at how much money mutual fund companies have in cash. You can tell by sentiment. Can you get an exact dollar amount? That's always for anybody that's difficult, because there's money overseas that could be considered sideline money. There's money under mattresses that could be sideline money. There's our money in savings accounts. Is that sideline money, or is it only the money that's sitting in money markets in brokerage accounts or on hedge fund balance sheets or on mutual fund balance sheets? I don't have an exact place that I go, but I do read that there are, you know, whether cash levels are elevated, and generally they're meaning in the mutual fund space, because that's where so much money is invested, and that's where a lot of money can influence the market very quickly if a lot of mutual fund investors come off the sidelines and utilize that cash. Now let's go to a text message question. You can text us at that same listener line number, 888-99-CHART, and we will answer it as quickly as we can. Now this question says, I was hoping you could give me your opinion on WAIIX. WAIIX, would it be wise to keep roughly 10% of my 401k allocation in this fund, as a hedge against the strong but slowly fading dollar? Well, this is the Western Asset Inflation Indexed Plus Bond Fund. These ones tough. I've been not a fan of inflation protected bonds for a while because of deflation. Now, there's the environment that we are going into, however, there is certainly the opportunity for inflation to pick up dramatically. Is that going to happen? Are we going to hit deflation because the central banks around the world are out of gas. That's very, very possible. Now, they could do helicopter money and start, who knows, just printing money and handing it to people, which I think is certainly possible at one point. It could go to negative rates, which they've already done in many parts of the world, and I think we will probably get there here in America at some point. And inflation will be sparked, and that's just based on the government will eventually do something because they have to. Deflation is terrible. It wreaks havoc on debtors, people that are in debt. And guess what? Governments are in a lot of debt. And so they're going to have to manufacture inflation. Now, is WAIIX, the Western Asset Inflation Index bond fund, good? It's kind of an average fund. Not great, not bad. Kind of an average fund. I'd say maybe slightly below average. It's okay. If this is one of your only bond fund options, because you're probably limited, you know, I would say it's okay as a diversification. 10%. It depends on your risk tolerance. You know, that's always very difficult. I can always tell you whether something's a pretty good investment over the short, medium, and long term, but I can't tell you at what percentage that's best in your portfolio unless I know your risk tolerance and your goals. If you want to be aggressive, 10% is kind of high. If you want to be more conservative, well, 10% might be a good allocation. So it just depends on your risk tolerance. Let's go to George in San Jose. How you doing, George?
Thank you so much, Justin, for taking my call. Question for Apple. The street consensus for 12 months target is approximately 124. Mm-hmm. And we know iPhone 7 probably is coming on September. Do you think around here is a good price for entry? I listen from radio.
Okay, sounds good, George. He's looking at Apple. Buy this for some of our managed accounts and a couple of our strategies back in mid-April. I think that was when it was trading around 90, low 90s, 92, 91, somewhere in there. It bounced back up into the high 90s. Now it's in the mid-90s, 95. I think you're going to get a lot of chop down here. If the market really sells off, I could see it going down in the low 80s. And that's where I'd really love it. We like it in the low 90s. We love it in the low 80s. And I think a lot of people are getting down on Apple. They think they're not innovating or whatever they feel. And usually this happens in the S cycle. You have an S cycle, and the S cycle is the iPhone S cycle. Meaning, you know, you come out with the iPhone 7. It's a new model, new redesign, a bigger screen, a lot of changes. And the next year they come out with the S model. Pretty much the same, maybe a little faster, a little better camera, not a huge difference. You have Touch ID, which obviously for some people might be a big change, but it doesn't really push people to buy iPhones again, new iPhones. They're okay with their previous model, and that's just the nature of it's harder and harder for them to continue to innovate on the platform, to keep things small and to add features that are meaningful. And that goes for everybody in the industry. They're not the only ones that are having difficulty. The smartphone market is just maturing, especially here in America. Even in China, it's kind of slowing down. So, I think the negativity towards Apple is a little overblown. Fundamentally, it's still very strong. Cash flows are incredible. And, low 90s to low 80s, great areas to be adding to positions. Now, let's finish up our main talking point. The difference between trading today and the 60s. Talked about the cost of trading. It was hundreds of dollars to trade just 100 shares. Now it's $10 or less many times. The information that you could get was a lot more sparse. You could really only get from your newspaper, from your broker, etc. And that's really how you bought shares, was through your broker. Diversification was more difficult. Why? Because trading costs were so large. We talk about now trading costs eating up returns. Imagine back then when 100 shares cost you hundreds of dollars to trade. And that's why getting into a mutual fund wasn't thought of as a terrible thing, even though you were paying commissions many times upwards of 8.5%. Today, there are tons of no-load funds. Okay? So, there were just maybe a couple hundred mutual funds back then. Today, there are tens of thousands of mutual funds. So, diversification is much, much different. And international investing was regarded as much too risky for most people to even consider. But nowadays, people have done studies and realized that international investing is actually a good diversification mechanism for a portfolio. It's good to have some international exposure. Okay? So that's important to understand. Investment advice. There were no academic analysis of investment practices. There was little or no understanding of asset classes, large cap versus small cap stocks, value versus growth. The biggest distinction were some mutual funds that had descriptions like aggressive growth or equity income, etc. Even Michael Price's mutual fund series turned in some really good investment results, and nobody really knew why. Well, today we know because we did research on it, and you know he was a value investor, which tends to be over the long run the best way to invest. The market back then wasn't the S&P 500. It was the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow 30. Very different than it is today. Still back then, it was a price-weighted index. So things are much, much different, but it's same in a lot of ways. Still emotionally driven. People are driven by emotions for buy and sell decisions, which always leads to bad, I would say always, 90%+ of the time, leads to bad money decisions. We now have IRAs and 401ks that weren't available back then. And like I said, there's thousands of no-load funds that offer more choices than investors could have ever imagined back then. And also, fiduciary advice. I see this all the time. This is something I want to talk about real quick. Stop getting duped by these large brokerage houses. I see it all the time. And we're having a record year at KPP. And we're getting more and more new accounts every day. And I see the assets that these big brokerage firms are talking about, life insurance companies, things like MetLife. We see it from brokerage firms like JP Morgan, from even Fidelity, Edward Jones, mutual fund companies, all over the place. It is brokers just reaming people for fees and commissions. It is absolutely crazy. Don't get roped in by a big name. They're in it for them, not you. You need to be searching for a fiduciary. If you don't know what that is, you need to take a hold of your money, stop all trading in your investment accounts by anybody but yourself, research what a fiduciary is. Typically, that's a registered investment advisor. In the 60s, you had to work with a trust portion of a bank. Now, if you're with an RIA, you are with a fiduciary. That's what we are at KPP Financial, and we have an obligation, and all fiduciaries have an obligation to invest in the best interest of their clients, not in the best interest of the brokerage firm. If they do, they can get sued. There's a lot of fines. It's ugly. So we always have to act in the best interest of our clients. So make sure that any advisor you're working with is a fiduciary. If they are not, 9 times out of 10, you are getting bad advice. Now, I hope you'll think of InvestTalk as more than a radio program or a podcast. It's really a source for answers anytime you have a money question. Two ways to get in contact with us: our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, or you can get a note to me directly. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. I'll get back to you.
If you have a question about our talking point today, there is a link to a related article on our website homepage. Or you can send a note. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get right back to you.
Yes, this is Mike in Tampa, Florida. I'm kind of looking for a value on Cellcom. It's an Israeli company, and the symbol is CEL. So I wonder what your thoughts on it were. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right, he's looking at Cellcom Israel. It's an Israeli provider of wireless voice data, content, text, and multimedia messaging services to 2.8 million subscribers, obviously out of Israel. No dividend yield, $652 million market cap, so it's a small cap name. I tend to like foreign companies, especially I kind of like the telecoms because steady business. Good cash flow for Cellcom Israel, although it has declined over 50% in the past couple years. That worries me a little bit. Return on equity has dropped dramatically, and I want to know why. That's my main thing. I want to know why. They have their financial leverage is large, but they've been reducing it. I like that. They've realized they have too much debt in their balance sheet, and they've been cutting that back with their cash flow. I really like that. They're not paying a dividend because of it. They're getting their balance sheet in line. And for the coming recession, that's going to be very important to be invested in companies that have their balance sheet in line. Now, they still have a pretty decent amount of debt, but hopefully before the next recession hits, they can reduce that a little bit more. So I like that. It's probably not cheap enough for me. It has had a pretty decent rally. It pretty almost doubled from where it was middle of last year in the $3 and change range, hit a high, 52-week high of $8.52. Now it's come down a little bit to $6.50. I like this little pullback. It's probably gonna oscillate here and consolidate for a while. I would say in the high fives, I don't hate it. In the high fives, I don't hate it, especially if you don't have a lot of international exposure in your portfolio. I think this might be a good way to diversify your portfolio with some international exposure. All right. Let's go to a topic that I hear a lot, and that is lending money to your family or your friends. Now, 82% of all Americans would help a family member financially. And even younger family members, 92% of individuals aged 18 to 34 say they would loan cash to a family member in financial distress. Now, obviously, it's hard to refuse a loved one, but there are some steps you need to take if you're going to help out a loved one. And after the break, I'm going to talk about what those are to make sure that everything is above board and it doesn't turn into an ugly situation. You never want that to happen. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and we have time to get your question in before the hour is up. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. It's our anytime number.
Hi, this is Chris in Arizona. I'm asking about a stock called New Media. NEWM. It has a lovely chart, but I never hear it getting talked about. So I'm just curious what your opinion is about New Media. Thank you.
All right, New Media Investment Group. They publish locally based print and online media publications in the U.S. with operations in 489 markets across 31 states. So pretty broadly diversified. But in the media space, newspapers, yields about 7.4%, high dividend yield. I don't think that dividend yield is sustainable. So if you're looking for that dividend, that seems a little high for me. And this is going to be very cyclical. If it go into a recession, well, what's the first thing you cut? Well, it's advertising. And a lot of these publications, most of these publications, live or a significant portion of their revenue comes from advertising. So I would be very worried about it. 2009, they lost $17 a share. It's trading at $17.74 today. So if you have something similar, that could be something that's very, 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 very poor, very dramatically, very, very dramatic drop in earnings per share. So I wouldn't say the chart is great either. Hit a high back in early part of last year around the 25 range, hit a low of 14 late last year, and it's making lower highs and lower lows. Never a good sign. So I would pass on it. Don't think that dividend is sustainable. Now, quickly before we close, I want to talk about lending money to friends and family. Now, the key to lending money to friends and family, especially if you expect the money to be repaid, is to treat the deal like a business loan and keep emotions out of it as much as you can. Now, it's difficult, but that's what you have to do. Consumers can safeguard themselves from damaging an important relationship because of money if they treat that loan as a business transaction. So what are the steps you need to take? First is, don't expect to get the money back. If you do, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. This is a gift, whether you get the money back or not. Realize that off the bat. Number two, expect slow repayments. Why is that? Well, the reason people need loans from their friends or their family members is because typically they can't get loans anywhere else. It's kind of embarrassing to go to your family member and say, I need money. So usually you're going to some sort of financial institution first. So that means if they're turning to you, it means either they have no credit or they have bad credit. Okay? And they view your loan, they're going to view your loan less seriously than they will view a loan from a financial institution. Whether it's a credit card, a home loan, student loans, whatever it is, they're probably going to pay them first. Now, there's a checklist you need to go through. One is, you have to ask these questions. Has this person asked for money in the past? If so, was I paid back? And was it in a timely manner? In conjunction with our agreement? What is the likelihood that I'll be paid back this time? What are the funds being used for? And one thing you have to think about is they have some sort of income, hopefully, otherwise I wouldn't loan them any money. What are their obligations? Do they have a car payment? Do they have to pay rent, a mortgage, student loans, credit cards? What is their debt picture? And if they already have money allocated to service those debts, where is the money coming from to pay your debt? Got to ask those questions. So you got to have paperwork in place holding both parties accountable. You got to go over all the important questions about repayment, what happens if it goes unpaid, develop a couple contingency plans, and remember, the IRS can come calling if your loan is too large and you don't get paid back. That's called a gift. You can gift up to $14,000 a year, but if it gets more than that, that can be a big issue. So be careful when you're lending to family. Our hour is gone. I hope you found it worth your time. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with Steve, we will have some new dates posted on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon for these individual retirement reviews on June 28th, and then in San Jose on the next day on the 29th. Just get on the schedule. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisory firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.